The Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you have all kinds of questions, and whenever you go to church and raise these questions or approach a pastor with these questions or bring these questions up with your Christian friends, you always hear the same tired answer. It's all about faith. Well, my friend, I believe in faith too, of course, but the word has become distorted and misused. Your questions are valid. Your questions are respected. Welcome to our sanctuary, not a sanctuary city so much, a sanctuary radio show, but it is a sanctuary for skeptics and doubters. Today, I am joined by my good friend and once a month co-host, Jim Barrier. Today, we will address questions such as, hasn't the Bible been handed down by men? How can you trust it? How can Jesus be the only way? Aren't all religions the same? What about people who never heard of Jesus? How can a loving God allow evil and suffering in the world? We did a lot on that one a few weeks ago, but Jim may want to approach it from another angle. That's fine. And how can a loving God send people to hell? Now, I can't guarantee that we'll get to every one of these today because every one could be its own show. Each of them is important in its own right, but we will do the best we can. Jim Barrier, welcome to our program.
Hey, Bob. It's so good to be on the show again, and I completely relate. I talk to skeptics all the time, as you do, and I'm very intrigued by this, and I love your intro. I do not like the response, but you take it by faith.
Jim? We're always telling people as Christians that this is a message of salvation, a matter of life and death. If they don't, I know you say things in a tactful way, and I do my best to say things in a tactful way, but when you boil it down to brass tacks, the Bible does teach that those who do not give their lives to Jesus Christ and accept him as Lord and Savior will not spend eternity with God in heaven. That's pretty important stuff. So when someone says, okay, well, help me out here because, gosh, I don't want to end up in hell. But on the other hand, if this is all about blind faith, what if it's not true? I don't want to waste my life doing something that's not true. And I agree with them. Yeah. If this stuff wasn't true, I can think of 100 things I'd rather do on Sunday morning than go to church. On the other hand, the Bible gives all kinds of answers to these questions. There are all kinds of things that corroborate the Bible from history, that corroborate the existence of God from science. And so I think they're fair questions. And when the men of the Bible talked about faith, they didn't mean that you blindly follow something. The word faith meant obey and trust. It meant you have the faith to trust God to work in your life. They assumed God was real. They assumed that they could find God through the Holy Spirit. John the Apostle said, this is how we know we belong to him, by the Spirit he gave us. So that one can have that relationship with God and know for a fact based on their relationship. But if they don't yet have the relationship, there is a trail of breadcrumbs that God has left them.
Yeah. And more Christians, and I don't mean just the pastors and folks like yourself that have dedicated yourself to the gospel and apologetics, but the basic rank and file people who are in the pews really could use some sharpening of their skills in this area, because everybody rubs shoulders with somebody who needs to know the good news and needs a legitimate answer to their questions, you know, not a pat answer, not a cop out, but a creative, philosophical, intelligent presentation. There's not enough of that, I'm afraid, at least in the American church.
I think you're absolutely right. By the way, before we go on, since I did mention that one of the questions that frequently gets asked relates to suffering, I know that you're doing some suffering right now, and I want you to know, everybody, that I offered to Jim that you didn't have to do the show today. His mother passed away just a couple of days ago. Jim, I was very saddened to hear that, and from everything you've said about her, she sounds like she was an exceptional woman, and she certainly raised an exceptional son. I'm sorry I never had a chance to meet her.
Yeah, extraordinary woman, and I can give her an awful lot of credit for any of the good things that have come out of my life. And I did appreciate your offering, but I really had a commitment to do this, and I need to do this. We've had a bunch of stuff. I don't want to go into long detail, but we've had some family illnesses on Leslie's side. In fact, she's been out in La Quinta, not far from you, taking care of her sister and brother-in-law, who have both been hit with cancer. And then a week and a half ago, my oldest daughter's house burnt to the ground, and she lost everything she
had. Oh, my gosh.
And then, this sounds like I'm making this up, but this is all, you know. This
no,
is
I believe you. I believe then, you.
And then mom passing, and I have to say this, first of all, for you and for listeners, I've had this amazing, overwhelming peace and the sense of God's grace that is just carrying me through this. And I told my wife this morning, because we went ahead and had church this morning, and I kind of canned my planned message, and we just had a time, and I shared with people, but I said, I want to model to them that even when you go through hardship, that you can do it with grace, and that's what I want people to see in my life. And so it was consistent with that. I want to do the show because I don't stop being a follower of Jesus, and God doesn't stop loving me, and I don't ever stop needing his grace and everything. So, it goes on,
Well, that's very much to your credit. And on the other hand, I wouldn't have blamed you at all if you needed some time. But I know we all grieve in different ways. I think I'm the kind of person, too, that would want to get back to my work just to put some structure in my life. Either way, I'm glad you're here. And when you're listing these different trials, and I don't even think the word trial adequately describes them. It is, the old phrase, when it rains, it pours. Don't know about you. I have found in my life that trials come in sets, whether they're major ones or minor annoyances. They come in sets. If I have one or two, I know I'm going to get three or four. The other side of it, though, is that then that season ends and a lot of good things and blessings come in sets, too. Now, I know some people can give you the theology that a trial is really a blessing because God's closer and you might learn something from it. But we've learned from the book of Job that sometimes you don't learn anything from it. There is a reason God does it. We don't always know what the reason is. So when I say blessings, I mean the kind of blessings that we like to think of as blessings, even though, but certainly during really dark times in my life, God has been very, very close because we have no choice but to get closer to him. And for myself, I never realize how far I am from God until I'm close to him again. It's kind of like when I'm out body surfing and there's this slight, but unnoticeable undertow, and you're ready to get out and you can't find your blanket or your beach ball or your umbrella because it's way down the coast. You don't know how far you've drifted.
Yards.
So
I miss San Diego when you talk like that.
Hey, my son is thinking of maybe moving to Texas. So.
Well, you know what?
He's thinking about it. It's not a
deal. We're going to leap right here because you and I turn out to be false prophets. Well, me more than you. You were kind of thinking maybe there's a possibility it could go that way. But, a couple of weeks ago, Texas was threatening to secede from the Union. Now I understand California is doing that.
I know. Isn't that funny? Yeah. Well, whether Texas secedes or California secedes, I'm going to be on the Texas side.
You know what?
I know secession was a bad thing, everybody, during the Civil War. Secession was a bad thing.
Yeah.
But it's not one size fits all with words. This time, secession would be a good thing because it would be for totally different reasons.
Well, it would be, and now I'm speaking now. I am a third generation San Diego native, and so I have deep roots out there, and I love I love the city, and I love my friends, and I love the beach. But I'm going to tell you, economically, politically, and in so many levels, Texas is so much more American. I don't know how to say that.
Yeah, but don't Texans think of themselves as Texans first and Americans second? Absolutely. I mean, they were their own republic before they became part of America.
Oh, and absolutely. And that's part of the thing.
They're quite practiced at being a separate state.
Well, there's the thing, you know, the amusement parks are named after the Six Flags of Texas. Well, that's because there have been six different flags that have flown over Texas.
Oh, for a moment, I thought you were talking about the Six Flags Magic Mountain Parks.
Yeah, right. Well, it gets its name from an amusement park that started here in Texas.
Is that right? No, I did not. Yeah. No, I'm going to sound like Johnny Carson now. I did not know that.
Did not know that. Yes. Those Six Flags were the different flags that flew over Texas, and it was Spain, France, actually the Confederate States of America.
They probably want to forget that little bump in their history, but the rest of it.
Yeah, yeah. And Mexico, and then, of course, Texas. And, you know, legally here, I've seen it, when you see flags, the flag of Texas can be at the same height as the U.S. flag. They are very proud, very independent, and there's people here that, you know, I mean, it's funny. The real extreme people, you know, they say, look, we've got coastline on the Gulf Coast, so our ships can get in and out. We have some of the higher learning institutions. We have our own Air National Guard. We've got all the oil. We've got NASA, so we control space. Fine. We can do fine without the rest of y'all.
Well, you know, on the subject of secession and California threatening to secede, California has other kinds of problems with God and may want to remember it lives on the San Andreas Fault. We may secede in a way we weren't wanting to. Mm. Kind of the Lex Luthor buying the real estate and having Casa del Lux and Otisburg. All right, hang with me, my friend. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
As if you haven't figured it out by now, Bob is mildly opinionated about the ultimate issues of life. But Bob also respects the opinions of others. To offer your own viewpoint or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, give us a call at 1-888-344-1170. 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach Bob through Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net. When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Christmas. I've been away far too long. I would tell you the name of this artist, but in a moment we're going to bring back Jim Barrier, and he probably knows who's playing it, but I'll only be able to guess once because these are the people that I use for all my Christmas bumper music. Welcome back to 1170 The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel, and before I do bring back my co-host and good friend Jim Barrier, we have some annual traditions on the Bob Siegel Show, and one of them, of course, you're experiencing right now. Our Christmas bumper music starting even in the month of November. I do that just to drive the ACLU crazy and pay them back for all the grief and heartache they give us every year when they freak out over manger scenes like the Gestapo's going to be at their door if somebody sees a baby in a cradle. Anyway, of course, in some ways, a different holiday called Thanksgiving kind of ushers in the Christmas season, and Thanksgiving comes very early this year. It kind of snuck up on me, which means I realized that today is our last chance before Thursday to bring back our holiday classic, our annual classic called How to Have a Politically Correct Thanksgiving. As always, here to tell you all about it is our own Smiley Miley.
Hey kids, Thanksgiving is just around the corner. And even though the actual holiday is Thursday, we're going to give you Friday off too. When you add in Saturday and Sunday, it will seem like a four-day holiday. But you would have gotten Saturday and Sunday off anyway, so it's really a two-day holiday made out of a one-day holiday. Isn't Thanksgiving fun? Thanksgiving is a different kind of holiday than Christmas. We don't use the word Christmas anymore because the word offends the five people in our country who don't celebrate Christmas. Not so with Thanksgiving, because no matter what people believe, everybody still loves to eat. So have a great time with your parents around the big dinner table, stuffing your little faces with turkey, pumpkin pie, cranberry sauce, and candied yams. And unlike Christmas, you can even say Happy Thanksgiving to every one of your little playmates. But be careful and make sure you don't tell them who we are being thankful to. Because if you did that, you might have to explain that the first Thanksgiving was made up of pilgrims who were thankful to God. And we don't talk about God anymore because talking about God makes people upset. And it makes them afraid that those who don't believe in God will be arrested and put in jail. That would never happen, but people are still afraid it will happen. And, well, you don't want people to be afraid, do you? Of course not. So don't talk about God unless you want to call him Allah. Then it is okay because people don't worry about being arrested in America for not believing in Allah. They just worry about being arrested in all the other countries if they don't believe in Allah. Now I know what some of you are thinking. What if someone asks me what the first Thanksgiving was all about? How can I explain that without mentioning God? Silly. There are all kinds of things to mention about the first Thanksgiving. You can mention the Mayflower. You can mention the Pilgrims, so long as you leave out the part about them coming to America for religious freedom. Because mentioning religious freedom means we will lose our religious freedom. But there's plenty more to talk about. Talk about how wild the original turkeys were. And talk about the Indians who were friendly to the pilgrims. Calling the Indians friendly is always a smart and sensitive thing to do. Only don't use the word Indian. Use the word Native American. Then people will smile at you instead of accusing you of hate speech. Oh, one more thing. If people ask you why Thanksgiving is a holiday, be sure not to tell them that holiday means holy day. Otherwise, you'll have to explain what's holy about it, and we'll be right back where we started. Well, now that you're up to speed on your etiquette and courtesy, Happy Thanksgiving, everybody!
All right, Jim Barrier, welcome back to our program.
Did you write that piece, Bob?
I wrote that, and we have...
Brilliant.
Some fine actors associated with our show. That's my daughter-in-law playing the part of Smiley Miley. So,
well, that
we have others. People can go to my website. There's about five or six Smiley Mileys. Oh my gosh, it's hilarious. But I mean, yes, I wrote it, but it would not work without that voice. Does she have $1 million voice or
perfect,
what?
Perfect. Yeah. And in fact, but it made me want to start eating turkey already.
But, I know. Forget this political correctness. He mentioned the word turkey. Did I hear the word turkey?
Well, not the country turkey, you know, because then we're back into some, you know, political turmoil. So that was great. Great piece. There's so many places we could go right now on this whole thing, because I get so tired of all of the political correctness and the holiday civil war that's been going on for a few years. I'm just going to celebrate Christmas. I'm going to say Merry Christmas to everybody I see. The world's gone nuts. Let's find out if maybe within the next 4 years we can reverse the current a little bit. I don't know. We'll see.
No kidding. I heard Ben Carson being interviewed today. They were asking him what job he might want in the Trump administration. And somebody said, well, our national surgeon, what do they call him, the surgeon general. She says, after all, you're a brain surgeon. I'm sitting there going, yeah, a brain surgeon. He couldn't do better for us than by performing brain surgery on about half the country right now.
Exactly. I saw you post that, and I thought, and we'll start at Capitol Hill.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Anyway, you had some questions that you've been going through with people at your church regarding some of the skepticism, or just sincere questions about the Bible, about Christianity.
Yeah. Well, you know, we kind of started off there on one just because of things I've been going through. But what do you say to people who say, this is how it's usually phrased, how could a loving God allow evil and suffering in the world? If he's all powerful and all loving, how could he let that happen?
Well, for one thing, who is the cause of most suffering and evil? People. Now, when people try to have it two ways, they act like they don't believe God exists. They don't take the Bible seriously. Well, look at the commandments that God gave. Some of them are pretty basic. But we look at this world, we see murder, we see stealing. We see adulterous relationships. God commanded us not to murder, commanded us not to steal. Yeah. We see racism. God, the Bible commands us not to be racist in many, many places. So when I see these horrible things going on in the world at the hands of people, that doesn't tell me that God doesn't exist. That tells me that God knew what he was talking about when he gave us these commands. Now, I realize there's other kinds of suffering. I didn't just answer why your mom passed away. But I like to start there. Who's responsible for most of the suffering? Most of the suffering in this world comes to human beings at the hand of human beings. And God could come down and stop us from doing it, or could reprogram us so that we're puppets or marionettes on a string. But if he did that, we would not have free will. Unfortunately, the ability to do right includes the ability to do wrong. Otherwise, it's not a real ability. When people say, well, why did God create evil? Good and evil are not substances that you see in a test tube. Good and evil are choices that we make out of our free will. The Bible says we're made in God's image. That doesn't mean that God looks like a human being. It means that, like God, we're thinking, feeling entities. We have sentience. We have a conscience. Like God, we can create. I like to write books and novels. Other people create by putting up a computer program. Others paint pictures. Others are architects. And then there's procreation. But being a procreator with God means we have free will. Again, the ability to do right includes the ability to do wrong, or it's not a real ability. We'll be right back. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric, Incorporated, license number 480-539, W&S Electric.
Bob Siegel not only writes fiction, but nonfiction as well. Over the years, Bob has received wonderful comments about his book on Christian apologetics entitled, I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, But... Many have put this book in the hands of their seeking, unbelieving friends, and the book takes it from there. This is because the book has a rhetorical skeptic that argues with Bob about the harder, less frequently discussed questions. As a result, the reader is immediately aware that they are reading from an author who relates to them. The moment they find themselves questioning something they see, their very question appears in the text. Every question in this book was one that was personally put to Bob during his many years of speaking on college campuses. I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, But... Available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
All right, Jim, we'll let you play our game just one time because they're all the same artists. Who are these artists playing our bumper music today?
I don't know. I know you like Mannheim Steamroller a lot.
Well, that's it.
Oh, well, how about that?
Was that actually a guess? Don't they have a pretty distinct sound, or are you being...
Yeah, you're being joking.
No, and, you're being sarcastic.
Oh, me? Bob? Come on.
I don't like sarcasm. Yeah, that's...
You never hear sarcasm on the Bob Siegel show. You're not supposed to tell lies.
Well, but I'm being sarcastic. It's not a lie. I'm being sarcastic in my usage of the word sarcasm, see?
You know, and truth is, I think there may have been a couple of times that Jesus was sarcastic.
As a matter of fact, there were a lot of the times when he spoke to the Pharisees and Sadducees. Yeah. He was very sarcastic. So, you know, it just depends on the situation.
Yeah, I think we don't get it because with culture and time, it doesn't translate well. But I'm thinking, when he said, you stranded a gnat and swallow a camel, I'll bet some people laughed in the crowd.
That was a pretty humorous image and also the one about it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle, because the needle they were talking about was not a sewing needle. A needle was a gateway into a city, and they made them small so that people... couldn't ride into their horses, and you have a 2-3-humped camel. It was even harder, and camels are the meanest, nastiest creatures. I guess my cat at home would be a rival, but for the most part, camels are the meanest creatures alive, and they'll spit on you. And so the idea of somebody trying to pull a spitting camel through, it was quite a humorous image, and you're absolutely right. We miss it because it was funny to a different culture.
Yeah, so I'm going to let you off the hook on the sarcasm because... You know, you're in good company there.
We're sarcastic. So. After all, would our Lord do less? I'm looking at the ceiling to make sure there's no lightning. None so far.
Yeah.
None so
far. Well, how about another question?
You bet.
Okay. And I get this one a lot. Is it fair that you have to believe in Jesus? Aren't there other religions it just seems so narrow to say that you have to believe in Jesus and that he's the only way. And that's a pretty popular question, especially with the younger generation.
It sounds narrow-minded, but the truth is we close our minds all the time. The purpose of having an open mind is to evaluate data and then make a decision. For example, I don't think anybody got up this morning and said, I should be open-minded about whether the sun is going to rise. I should be open-minded about whether the earth rotates around the sun. Could somebody come up and say, well, you say that 1 + 1 = 2, maybe 1 + 1 = 10. See, we it's only in religion where we feel the freedom to get so iffy about things. And I'll tell you why that is, because when people say that they respect other religions, They'll make the statement that all religions are true. And right. when they say all religion, I mean, if there's an atheist, no, but a yeah. religious person might say all religions are right. They don't realize it, but what they're really saying is all religions are wrong. Because yeah. when they tell you, you know, why Christianity, why not something else? Well, what they're really assuming is that these religions are man-made. They're fantasies that we invented. Now, sometimes right. if we accepted a premise, we would accept a logical conclusion. That is a logical conclusion if I were to accept that premise. Unfortunately, it's a faulty premise. The premise that these religions are man-made fantasies. If they were really made-up fantasies, then it would be like saying, why do you like the Chronicles of Narnia? Maybe you should choose the Lord of the Rings. They're both fantasies. Just pick the one you want. If the religions were all made up fantasies, that would be true. But the founders of our different religions, I'm talking now about major world religions, they didn't claim that they were fantasies. They claimed, for the most part, that it was revelation given to them by God. And yet they teach completely contradictory things. There's a yeah. law that comes from the philosopher Aristotle called the law of non-contradiction. And he says, if you have two truth claims and they contradict themselves, they cannot both be true. They may both be false, but they cannot both be true. In other words, I can't call my wife on the phone and say, I'm coming home for dinner, and yet I'm not coming home for dinner. Husbands, try that out on your wives, okay? See, if a politician contradicts himself, especially in these days of YouTube and videos where everything they say can be played back, now we jump all over them. But somehow yeah. with the Bible, and you know what's interesting, Jim, when somebody finds a contradiction within the Bible, now, I don't believe the Bible does contradict, so I should say alleged contradictions. They'll right. jump all over that. They'll say, well, how can that, you know, how can you believe in God when he contradicts himself? And yet, if there's a contradiction between the Bible and the Quran and the Quran and the Bhagavad Gita, oh, that's no problem. They're all beautiful. They're assuming these religions are not true, even though they're not stating it that way. But the founders of the religions claim that they were true. They all contradict completely. So if they all contradict, we have a choice. Either one of them only is true, or maybe they're all false. Now, I have my relationship with Christ, but before I had that relationship with Christ, I was open to the fact, to the possibility, that all religions, including Christianity, might be false.
Mm-hmm. If you investigate, a lot of it has to do with, does a person really want to know if something's true, or do they just want to support their own lifestyle and find something that's convenient for the way they live? But I've always really believed that if someone really is looking for truth, they're going to find it. And there's so many stories documented with missionaries and stuff. And even in the Bible, you know, you have the story of Philip and the Ethiopian, you know, and here's a guy, he's looking for truth. And the Lord found a way to reveal that to him, and Cornelius and Peter in that story. So I think if someone's really looking, they're going to find the truth. And I believe, as I think you do, that truth is going to lead them to Christ.
The Bible says God is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. Although yeah. seeking is our conscious awareness. I should tell our listeners, if you're finding yourself desiring to get close to God, human beings by nature don't have that desire. That means the Spirit of God is drawing you and yeah. wooing you. So what we call seeking is really responding. We'll key in more on that when we return. This is Bob Siegel. Looking for a church? Maybe not. Perhaps you've had your fill of churches. Maybe you even grew up in the church. Maybe as a kid you were dragged to Sunday school against your will. Maybe you used to throw spit wads as Mrs. Pumpernickel tried desperately to interest you in the missionary journeys of the Apostle Paul. You may have grown up listening to long sermons, anxiously looking at your watch to see how much of the game you were missing at home on TV as the pastor made his 97th point. Or perhaps you were not raised as a Christian at all. Instead, you have merely encountered Christians. Maybe some obnoxious personality tried to shove the gospel down your throat using all the tact of a lawnmower in a barber shop. Well, my friend, perfect Christians don't exist because perfect people don't exist. That's why Jesus died for our sins. So I'm not going to tell you that the people of Skyline Church are perfect. I'm just going to tell you that we come real close. No, actually, you'll just find people who struggle with life the same as you. But we're honest about the struggle, and we help each other with the struggle. What you will find is a church that takes the love of Jesus Christ seriously. After all, his message is one of mercy and inclusion, and we don't need 97 points to talk about God. Ask anybody. Our sermons have never made more than 96 points. Skyline Church at 94 in Hamishaw, Sunday morning services at 8:30 a.m. and 10:30 a.m. Talking about some of the questions that skeptics sometimes ask with my good friend Jim Barrier. One of them, how can we say that Christ is the only way to God? You know, I'll give you the cliff notes. Christ claimed to be God. He claimed to be God in the form of a man. Now, what's so illogical about God visiting this earth saying, "Hi, I'm God, and I, God, am the only way to God"? Please welcome back Jim Barrier.
That's a great point.
Well, you know, I had somebody after one of my debates came up to me, and he says, why one God? Why can't there be many gods? And here's what I said to him. I said, there's nothing wrong with the idea of multiple gods as a concept. It's just that that's not the way things happen to be. If we happened to live in a universe that had many gods, that would have been fine. But we happen to live in a universe that just has one God.
And, you know, a long time ago, had a young convert that I was mentoring, and he had run into somebody that had a view of many gods and that thing. And this kid had just been a Christian a couple of months, and somebody was telling him that, you know, there are finite gods and they kind of work their way up, and that kind of evolutionary thing, and he said, you know, if that's true, I want to know who created those gods, because that's who I want to worship. That was brilliant.
Yeah, and that's another question that an atheist will bring up. They'll say, if God created me, who created God? Because one of the arguments Christians give for the existence of God, which is a good one, but it can eventually look like it's breaking down. They say, how can the complexity of this universe exist without a creator? How do you have a watch without a watchmaker? How do you have a computer without a computer programmer? Look how complex the human body is. And the human body's beautiful. Doesn't that tell us it was programmed by a master scientist and master artist? And it sounds like a perfect argument until they say, well, is God complex? And we say, yeah. And they say, well, then who created God? And we say, nobody. So then they put in the zinger. So if God could exist eternally with all his complexity, why couldn't the universe have existed eternally in all of its complexity? But there are answers for that. For one thing, scientists no longer, there was a time when many scientists believed that the universe itself was eternal. If you look at the Big Bang Theory, and I love the TV show, but the theory itself says there was a time when the universe did not exist. How do you get something out of nothing? You can't. It's a rational impossibility. And by the way, the question of how could God exist from beginning to end is a relevant question within the boundaries of time and space. But the Bible teaches that God is removed from time and space. The Bible was saying things about time and space 2,000 years before physics professors were saying it, long before Einstein. Physics is catching up with the Bible. I know that sounds strange to people who think the Bible is such an anti-science book.
They've been told that by people who are not very scientific, I think. On the whole science thing, and I do my homework on these things because it's important. I have, over the years, kind of come to the opinion that the arguments aren't so much about science. And I love what you said earlier about premises and conclusions. If you have a faulty premise, you're going to get a faulty conclusion. But I don't think so much the people that I talk to day to day or, you know, in life, it's not logic and it's not science. It has more to do with accountability. And if you open the door to a divine mind or intelligent design or whatever terms you want to use because you don't want to say God, but if you open the door to the possibility that everything was created by an uncreated being, then it follows that that person is bigger and smarter than me, and I need to pay attention to his advice.
Yeah.
That means I'm going to have to change. One of the questions I ask, I talk to a lot of atheists, and probably not as many as you do, but I deal with them a lot, and I'll always ask, there's no God, then how do you account for a sense of right and wrong? Where does that come from?
That's and absolutely true.
Those kind of things, and we have an innate sense. And there may be different, you know, they will twist things from one culture, one tribe to another, but there's always a law, there's always a rule that something is right, something is wrong. And where does that come from? And where does personality come from?
You can't get the personal from the impersonal. It's a rational impossibility.
Yeah.
You can make a mathematical equation out of that.
Yeah. And you're right. Nothing can never produce something. 0 + 0 is
equals
always 0.
That's the equation. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it is about math. I just read an article this week, and this off the chart mathematician, and he's talking about the whole thing, and he talks in this interview about how he didn't used to believe in God, but the more he's learned, the more he understands about the universe, he sees so much order, and he says God was a mathematician because you see all of these things that add up. And they make sense mathematically, and I really love that, you know. But he's a person who's being honest, and of course, when you do that, if you start to open the door to a creator, then you have to make yourself morally accountable to that higher power, if I can use that term, I understand that it's God. I believe it's the God of the Bible, and I believe that Jesus was God personified for us to see what he's like. I think the people that argue the hardest, I will ask them this question. If there were a God that I'm describing, if God is the God of the Bible and the God that I'm talking about, would you have to change anything in your life? And an honest person will say, well, of course I would. And when they do, if they're honest, if they say that, I'll say, well, then that really is the issue, isn't it? You don't want to change, so you'd rather just believe something that's easier for you to live the way you want to live.
Absolutely. I was speaking at a fraternity one time at Willamette College in Salem, Oregon, and somebody brought up the fact that our copies of the New and Old Testament are manuscripts. They are just that, manuscript copies. We don't have the originals, because in those days the printing press hadn't been invented yet. Yeah. I said, hey, from the time that Aristotle lived and wrote to the earliest copy we have of an Aristotle manuscript, there's a time gap of 1,400 years. With the New Testament, best manuscripts were within 200, 300 years. I'll tell you what he said when we come back.
You know, it's common in today's uncertain economy to feel apprehensive. After all, the seemingly limitless choices in the housing market can look quite confusing. You might even know people who've shared their difficult experiences with the housing market, sometimes losing money instead of what they had hoped would be a simple and profitable procedure. Well, here's the good news. Realty Executive All Areas here to help. Our track record is proven. Listen, since 1994, we've sold thousands of homes in the San Diego area. What may seem like an obstacle to you is just a challenge for us. We thrive on multitasking and achieving goals. When faced with opportunities or unique situations, our level of determination goes into overdrive. We're confident we can use our skills to attend to your personal needs. Give me a call. Fred Falduti with Realty Executives, All Area, 619-401-2150. That's 619-401-2150 or fredfalduti.com. That's Fred, FALDUTI.com.
You've already heard some of the wonderful customer reviews of the Dangerous Christmas Ornament, but now listen to some highlights from a professional review by Lisa Ruth of Communities Digital News. The book is literally a page-turner that will delight children and adults alike. Readers will find a piece of themselves in Mike, whom Siegel portrays perfectly. He develops the 12-year-old deftly and makes him real to the readers. They will adore Aunt Lorene. They will remember their first love and the pain of betrayal from a friend. Caligula the cat is a wonderfully clever addition to the story. He steals the book with his caustic insight, making all readers wonder just what their own pets would say if they could talk. The real gift of the Dangerous Christmas Ornament is the lessons it weaves amid the adventure. It reminds us of the social and personal responsibility we share and the repercussions of our actions on those around us. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament has adventure, entertainment, and some extremely important lessons. What more could you ask for in a book?
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Those of you who live in the San Diego area can find copies of my children's novel, The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, at a few of our local bookstores, including a couple that jumped to my mind, Sea Christ Books in Lemon Grove and Skyline Bookstore. And of course, at any time, wherever you live, you can get it off of Amazon on their Kindle, Barnes & Noble on their Nook, or from either store, there are print versions available. Say hello again to Jim Barrier.
Hey, and I have read the book, and I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I've been a longtime fan of C.S. Lewis, not only his apologetics works, but his fantasy works, and I really enjoyed Dangerous Christmas Ornament, and I would strongly recommend listeners to check it out. It's a very, very fun book to read and with a point. So just plug in your book there, Bob.
Well, thank you very much, my friend. Hey, are you open to taking a call from a listener?
Sure.
Okay. Before we do that, let me just quickly finish because we kind of left off where I was talking to that student in the fraternity.
Yeah.
And I mentioned that there's quite a difference in the copies of manuscripts between the Bible and someone like Aristotle. And the reason I'm bringing this up, Jim, is because it's similar to what you were saying about sometimes what the real issue is. The guy very honestly said, well, yeah, but Aristotle isn't challenging my life. Jesus is. I said, I said to him, thank you for being so honest. Okay.
Yeah.
Tim, welcome to our program.
Hey, just a quick question, because I know we're getting to the bottom of the hour here. My question is this: can a person be sincere, honest, informed, not resisting anything because it might change their life, and just still not agree with what you believe? And if that can't be the case, why is your belief immune from the same?
Okay, it's an excellent. Okay, Tim, thank you. That's an excellent question, and I'll answer it, and then I'll let Jim put his take on it. Jim was talking about the fact that it's sometimes a moral issue. There are moral reasons why people don't want to accept Jesus. However, it is true that one can be very, very sincere and say, I would accept Jesus if he were real. I'm just not convinced. Absolutely. And Tim, I'll tell you what, Tim, I know you're off the air. If you'd like to call back, I have a book. Maybe you heard it advertised earlier in the show. It's called I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, But... And it deals with questions that honest skeptics ask. And whether you would call yourself an honest skeptic or not, I do believe you're an honest person. You have at times before expressed skepticism about Christianity, even what kind of God may or may not exist. I believe you called yourself an agnostic. But wherever you think you are now, Tim, if you would like to call in and give Nick your snail mail address, or just by email or Facebook, send me your snail mail address. I'd be happy to send you that as a complimentary gift. But absolutely, a person can say, no, it's not that I don't want to serve God. It's that I'm not convinced. You may remember, Tim, I said that earlier in the show. Don't know when you tuned in. Right at the beginning of the show, I said sometimes people say, well, look, if God exists, I should follow him. But I don't want to do it by blind faith, because if this isn't true, I don't want to waste my life. So I respect that. That's why we call this show a sanctuary for skeptics and doubters, where they'll be treated with respect. And so, yes, the thing is, though, I am convinced that there is solid, solid evidence for the reliability of the Bible, from the fulfillment of Bible prophecy to the corroboration of archaeology. I believe there's fantastic scientific evidence for the existence of God. I believe there are things we can tell people if they are looking for that, and it's not just about blind faith. So, Jim, what would you add to that? What else? What would you like to say to Tim?
Well, I would say that's exactly where I was before I came to a position of faith. I was skeptical, certainly sincere, and many of us, that was a stepping stone in our path, and so... I would not in any way deny that or belittle that or invalidate that. I mentioned C.S. Lewis, who wrote Fantasies, but he also wrote some great works presenting the case for Christ. And one of the classic books is Mere Christianity. And he made a statement in there that has stuck with me from early on. In my walk, and it was, you know, the claims of Jesus Christ are so extreme, so radical, that either he was a great con artist and a liar, or he was insane, or he was who he claimed to be. And so, for me, everything comes back to the person of Jesus, who I believe, and there's so much, you know, as people say, well, he was mythological, he didn't exist. There were probably at least 10 non-Christian historians who gave account of this Jesus of Nazareth. He did exist. He was historical. And if you read the claims that he made about himself, he was either nuts or hustling people, or he really was who he claimed to be. And so for me, it all comes down to the person of Jesus. Who was he? Was he who he said he was? And if he was, then my sincerity drives me to finding out more about him. So that's kind of what my path was. But I was as cynical and skeptical as a person could be. I wasn't raised with any religious training.
And that's me too.
I identify.
Yeah, Tim, when you talk about sincere skeptics, you're talking to two people who were, yeah. and I was raised Jewish. Atheistic, liberal Jewish. I was raised without a belief in God, but I was also raised with a real apprehension about Christianity, since my own people have been murdered in the name of Christianity, not by true Christians, but God revealed himself to me, and I now have a relationship with God. If I didn't have that, I wouldn't be doing this radio show. We'll see you all next week. Jim, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.